Welcome to the second episode of the podcast that accompanies the new international residency program, which is a collaboration between the Theatre Festival of Flanders, the Dutch Theatre Festival, and the Battersea Arts Centre in London. This international residency took place over the course of 9 days at 3 festivals with 6 makers, 2 from each of the organizers' countries. We were invited to get together to look at the festivals from their personal perspectives, to take stock of the state of the performing arts in each of the countries that they visited, and share their findings with one another. During the Horizon Showcase at the Edinburgh Festival, late August, the Dutch Theatre Festival, in early September, and the Theatre Festival of Flanders, in mid-September, the guests and residents have visited and discussed performances, met other professionals, discussed work practices, international themes, and ultimately have shared their findings with the public in various ways, which includes this podcast series. My name is Lisanne Kniese, and together with Debbie Oskam, we accompanied the guests in residence during their time in Amsterdam. If you wish to learn more about the International Residency Program in general, and each of the participants in particular, please listen to the introductory podcast in which I sat down with each of the participants individually for a small, cozy chat in the Theatre Café de Smoeshaan. This is the second episode of 2 episodes. In this second episode, I sit down and talk with the 3 remaining participants of the residency. These participants are Muzia Wankumi, Hester Stefan Chillingworth, and Mathieu Weideven. And rather than focusing on their direct experience of the residency, we talk about their practice as makers and the wider themes this bringing together of 6 very individual people has brought about. Amongst other things, we cover the role of identity in their work. From there, we end up in the well-known human phenomenon of creating boxes for oneself and others. And ultimately, we talk about the use of language in both the performances that the group has seen during the residency and in their own work. Hi guys, welcome. Mathieu, if you could introduce yourself.
I'm Mathieu Weideven. I live in Rotterdam. Tomorrow I turn 31. It's almost my birthday. September 11th, special date. And I'm a theater maker. I practice in Rotterdam.
My name is Muzia Wankumi. And I just turned 23 last Saturday. I live in Ghent. That's where I also study. My pronouns are she, her, they, them.
My name is Hester Stefan Chillingworth. I'm non-binary and my pronouns are they, them. And I come from the UK. And we seem to be saying our age, which is funny. So I am 42.
So you guys have been here 2 days in Amsterdam now. So this is your third day. You've seen 4 shows here and you've seen a couple of shows in Edinburgh as well. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the shows, or I've noticed a lot of the shows take themes of identity with it. How do you deal with the concept of identity in your own work or in your own life? And how do you see it in other people's work?
For me, it's something that is very present in the sense that identity shapes the way you view things, or in Flemish we say like the glasses which through you see the world, and those are specific to your identity and have like a big impact on what you talk about and what is important to you and the things you want to talk about or want to change or bring into your work. So for me, it's like a core thing.
Yeah, I saw a lot of challenging of the norm identity that which I was happy with. Immediately when it was not challenged, I was annoyed. Or not challenged. I mean, it was taken for granted too much, or I don't know how to say it in the right way.
Ignored that it was some that. Identity says something, maybe.
It's been something I've been actually quite, it's not so recent, actually 3 years already been busy with for myself also, and how it influenced your view on the world, if you really take it under the loop. No, I was happy. I'm really happy to see that it's so, on the topic at the moment.
I think I agree with what's been said that identity. I think it's really hard. Maybe it's impossible actually to divorce yourself from your identity. Like, I don't think you could make some work that was quote unquote neutral, you know, because that's not a position that exists. And sometimes in my work, I would explicitly talk about identity, but I think more often I try to make work that proposes that the existing forms of stuff we have are not sufficient, because my experience of gender is that the binary gender structure is not sufficient, and I would argue made up, constructed. So I would try to make work that deconstructs forms of things. So that's coming directly from a position of identity within myself, but you could maybe watch it as an audience and not experience it about gender or about transness or anything. You maybe just experience it more widely of thinking about form, or my hope would be maybe it sometimes lands on people and they relate their own perspective. And as Muzia was saying, like your own lens, the glasses you see the world through, maybe they're going to join it from that angle. And that would be my ideal hope.
Esther Stefan, you've performed things abroad and internationally as well. Have you noticed a big difference between how people in the UK might interpret your work and people abroad interpret your work?
I would say in the UK, my work is seen as more experimental and challenging and words like that than it is abroad, which I think that says a lot about the kind of cultural landscape in the UK, where there's a really predominant kind of history of like the well-made play and like narrative and character and quite a conservative form. So yeah, it tends to be like often if I take my work abroad, a festival would say, oh yeah, this is a dance piece, and they just receive it as dance. And I'm thinking, yes, it is a dance piece, but maybe in the UK they would be like, no, it can't be dance because you're talking or something like that.
Do you recognize that in the in the things you've seen at this festival, that it would be also seen as difficult or challenging in if it was shown in the UK?
I think it would depend the context it was shown in. So in some contexts, yeah, the work would be baffling to people. I think it would really depend how it was presented. But yeah, if you just presented it as theatre and you just said, come and see some new theatre, then you might have some very confused people in the audience for sure. But if you said, you know, contemporary theatre or experimental theatre or physical theatre or devised theatre, then maybe people would, your audience would be more aware before they came in the room of the kind of thing they might see.
Mathieu, you made The Answer to Why, which is a text-based piece, and that's the only thing I've seen from you. So to me, you are a text performer. You make text-based theater. Do you find that you need to use certain boxes to define your theater so that people come in with certain expectations?
It's funny because I don't see my work as text-based. but I understand my latest piece can be interpreted that way. So people need boxes too. Yeah, I think so. Because at first, I explain actually a lot in my play, but it's really necessary to explain a lot. And then I, for example, had a review that said like, yeah, it's quite illustrative. Like, I interpreted it as a negative thing. Like, I had, because of this element he uses in his performance, it's a bit too illustrative. But I really didn't agree because I think, yeah, if I don't explain it, people will not understand, because this whole thing that I'm talking about takes place in such a different context than people know of, that I have to explain it to the bone and like awkwardly clear. So yeah, I think in a way, maybe then it needs a box of like, maybe it's a bit more storytelling.
Muzia, you said that you're currently very interested in the network and how we're connected, and you're reading a book on fungi.
Mm-hmm.
How do boxes of things fit into your worldview right now?
Connects to what you were saying about, or I think that you were going to say this, like boxes help to structure the world, and that maybe naming things first, to name it and then to accept it, is an easy way to navigate from how we look at things in the world right now, and then navigate towards this more connected thing, that first you have to name stuff and then we can incorporate it into our worldview. So I think as long as we don't stick in the boxes or see the boxes as permanent and truth, and truth in the sense of mathematically correct, because nothing is. So maybe just like a tag, so you can see like, okay, this might be this, and then you move the tag and put it somewhere else if you have changed your view, like a temporary label to make things a bit more clear in the terms of how things are right now.
I think it sounds quite subversive. What I get is that you're accepting that there are boxes and it functions that way, but you're trying to also break open that system.
Yeah.
From inside.
Yeah. That for me, that connects to something I was interested in last year, in like the thing of tricksters, who are things or concepts or people who live on the border between two things stated as normal, or like in between life and death, or in between the binary genders, that people who are don't fit in the boxes use this term of non-binary to say like there is no binary, I think. But using this term is in a way labeling it, but to discard the other labels, I guess. Like one no to have a thousand of yeses.
I think lots of things you said there, everything you said there is really important. When you were talking about the labels of the boxes and like moving them, that feels like a really important thing that I've been thinking a lot about, in terms of it feels like we're quite resistant in society to let people just change around. Mm-hmm. You know, even if it's your opinion on something or your fashion style or whatever, you know, because there is maybe this drive for identity politics that's like kind of got a sense of destination, or like you, or kind of real absolutism.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree, it feels really subversive to kind of go, it's all allowed, and you can go this, now mm-hmm. this, now this, now that again, or all of those things, you know. And I think the work that excites me most is work that also does that. So you kind of, when you're watching it, I mean me, as soon as I begin to think, oh, I see, then I realize, oh no, I don't see. So it's changing and I'm going over here, or it's saying, oh yes, I am that, but I'm also this. That really excites me.
Mathieu, back to you. So I just called you text theater. How did I make you feel? Because we just talked about the little boxes and we went there. So I've only seen one show of yours, and I boxed you and you had a reaction to that. Could you care to elaborate a little bit more?
For me, it's fine. But I found it also quite funny that there's always like this need to put me in a box. So now, yeah, weirdly enough, I won this theater writer's prize. And it's like, so you're a theater writer. And I cannot really get used to the idea that I am that. So I found it also funny, this need of boxing all the time. And I understand also, but I see also the power of these boxes. For example, sometimes people say like, oh yeah, the European is really about looking for your Surinamese identity. And then they really make it like, okay, it's your story. It's for you. And then I always try to grab them back, like, no, wait, this is your story. But it's a part of the story that you didn't hear of. Yes, it's about my Surinamese identity, but at the same time, it's also about how not Surinamese I am, but I am actually how Dutch I am, or even from the south of Holland, I would say, or the Netherlands. It's sometimes like looking into one box and finding out more your relationship to this box than stepping into one and being like, yes, okay, now here's my box. I don't know. I think also it's not possible anymore to. But of course we have these boxes. So I think the approach could be more fluid. Like, okay, now this piece falls in this box, or this is what you're doing. But no, I don't know. I think it can be more challenged. But I can say that I started it from a really visual kind of theater, and I did this, or this piece, I worked with a lot of text. That's okay. But to box me in, like, okay, now you're like a text-based, I don't know.
Some of my favorite artists, you know, they just have their whole practice without, and it's all mixed in. There's an artist called Franco B who, you know, it's just like, it's just all the work. And some of it's performance, some of it is visual art, some of it is sculpture, some of it might be, I don't know, an installation or an intervention in a public space. And Franco doesn't divide any of it, doesn't say, like, on the website, doesn't say performances, text work, visual art. It's just all the practice. And I think that's really great. I don't know why I don't do that. I think I divide my work when I'm trying to explain to people so that I can navigate a path through it for them or something. But I think it's really brave and just makes real sense to go, these are all the ways I'm exploring the things I'm exploring, and they all coexist. Really cool.
Also, you're saying relating to a box gives like a lot of breathing space. Now I see, like, instead of box where you go into, it's more like, oh, now I lean towards this, but I also can lean towards this. Relating to a box instead of labeling is my way to. You still use boxes, but not as a set, strict, permanent thing.
Have any of you ever consciously decided to step into a box to see what will happen?
Yeah, sure, yeah. To see what's there. For me, now, for example, now with, like, okay, this, but it was more like, okay, this story, this thing that I'm working on needs a lot of explanation. Needs a lot of words, so I'm gonna need the text box. And there we go. So in that way, yeah, I was conscious that this was going to be a text-based piece. The last one, yeah.
I think, yes, I have stepped into the box of trans, however I can say that, for funding. Applications, but also for myself, because I am trans. But I think for a long time in my work, I felt, and I still struggle with this a bit, that if I name anything concretely, not just about transness, but anything subject-wise concretely, I kind of kill it or squash it, or it goes flat, because then the audience can take a position in relation to it, or maybe feel they can, which could be a fix. Could feel like a fixed dynamic, like, oh, well, I'm not trans, so it's not my experience, or, oh, I don't agree with this, or, oh, I'm threatened by this, or, oh, I'm excited by this, or whatever, a fixed thing. And I still think there is some truth in that. Like, I think, a bit like I was saying before, really exciting work does the thing that Matthew was saying about it. It's like it could be very specific to the artist, but the specificity makes it universal. So you be specific to be universal. And I sort of have come to realize that sometimes the naming of a thing can actually help with that, because it's almost like the more specific, it can breathe out to be wider. So for me, that's kind of a constant battle, actually. Like, how much do I name? How mm-hmm. much do I leave open? How do I not let an audience member think, oh, this is not for me? But then also it's hard to navigate how much of my thinking is about that and how much of my thinking is just not wanting to have to label myself or commodify myself. So I think it's a constant negotiation, which happens all the time for me, I think.
Esther Stefan, have you ever been in a position where you were able to give the task of marketing and coming up with the marketing blurb to someone from marketing or a dramaturg, and that you just let yourself have complete freedom with what you make and not have to worry about those narratives and what you name it, and how it comes across to an audience and how you're going to sell it? That sounds like it would be scary, but also freeing, maybe even impossible.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I've never been I've never had someone suggest they would want to do that. You know, a marketing person or a dramaturg or whatever. I have had lots of people say, what is this piece of work about? With different pieces of work. Which I find like a really, I don't know, that question just makes me like, woo, feel like I'm turning into a fossil or something. I really hate that question. And I've always thought before that was about the people asking it, but actually I think I'm realizing it's equally about me. And like that negotiation of naming stuff. But I did have a conversation with someone recently. I made a piece which is about a lot of things. But one thing it is also about is top surgery. I'm going to have top surgery in a couple of months. And one thing for me it's very concretely about is top surgery. But it never says it in the piece. There's no talking in the piece. And somebody asked me recently, is that what it's about? Because they said, I didn't read it. So I read it as these other things, blah, 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 blah. And somebody else said they thought it was about that. And that was really interesting for me because I actually found there was a level at which it was really important to me to say, yes, it is. I don't want people to think it's just about that. I think that's always my fear, that then people might go, oh, your piece is about one thing. And I would always feel like, no, it's about loads of things. But I did realize in that moment, I think what I realized is that for people, for audience members for whom that might be a really powerful invitation to come and see it, I thought, oh, it's really important to name that, actually, because they're not going to know from a picture or like some kind of poetic blurb, you know. So it's like opening that really specific door that says, yeah, come through, this is actually for you, it's for other people, but it's really for you. I could feel in myself the urge to say, yes, it is about that. Always intention with not wanting to get shut down. But that was an interesting recent example of somebody else, yeah, really just asking that question about what somebody else had seen in it.
Have you ever experienced that, Metro, where you're trying to name something to get a certain audience in, like, this is for you?
Yeah. It was really specific with like naming in the promotion text that I was from the south of Holland. That really, for some people, it was quite important. I had some people that came to me after, like, oh, it's really, really nice to have a story from somebody who came from there about this. Because sometimes, yeah, or a lot of stories are not from this region. So I remember that I was a bit awkward with it because I thought, like, I don't live there anymore. But yeah, in the end, I'm happy that box was was used.
Musia?
Yeah, because I feel like I'm like just starting out, and now the work I was in was mostly other people's work in which I inscribed myself and as a performer. Yeah, last year I sort of made my own piece for like my bachelor's, and then we were also thinking about, yeah, how do you do this? Because we want to make the work for people who relate to the topics we relate to. But it was school related, the piece, and because it was COVID, only people from school could go. And then we felt like, oh, maybe this is then not the audience we made this for. And that, yeah, made me think like, oh, what if we are out of the school context and everyone can come? How do you indeed attract the people you want without getting labeled as, oh, these are four people who are not men, must be a feminist piece. But then it is, and we want the piece to be for those people who are interested in those topics. And yeah, it's very difficult, and I have no clue how to navigate this yet.
So, but the piece that you made it without, well, like whilst you were making what you wanted to make. You weren't thinking about the fact, oh, only these people are going to see it.
Yeah, we were thinking about, we want to make it for ourselves and the people who have like similar interests. But we knew that most of those people couldn't see it. So that was weird to do.
Esther Stefan, has the way you approach making work changed because of audience?
I think it has changed somewhat. I don't know if that's because of audience or just also because of like age and time. Definitely the work I used to make was more confrontational to the audience. So my imagined audience was always like old middle-class white people who wanted to spend money at the theatre and have a good time. So then I would make shows that said, oh, what are you doing? You're so lazy, you know, like really have a go at those people. And which is kind of weird because also those wouldn't be the audience who would come to my show. So it's more like conversation with part of society, I suppose, or structure of class and that kind of thing. And definitely, I think the work I make is just less confrontational to an audience now, or less directly confrontational like that. But I think that's probably more because of age and time than of the audience themselves.
Yeah, I think hearing what you said, it becomes more clear in my head that I also now rather would make something that the people I relate to feel warm, and I would love them to see my piece, rather than saying no to something I don't like in society and then thinking that those things are the people who come and see me. That I would rather say like, oh, it can also be this, and then have like a warm hug. That's something I experienced in the last piece we saw yesterday, that it was like, oh, I feel like this might have been made for me, and that made me feel very warm. And it was not saying like, oh, this is a bad part of society and you're the cause of it. And then in work I would like to make, I would like to address it to the people I would love to give this warm feeling to. And if they're in the audience, good. And if they're not, the other people can feel like, oh, now I realize that all the other pieces that I played are made for me, and I have always been comfortable and now I'm not. Why?
What a nice statement. That you always have been comfortable and now you're not. And that makes you explore why you are uncomfortable. Any pieces that you've seen during this residency that have made you feel uncomfortable because you felt that they weren't for you?
I think for me, it was rather that in Edinburgh, we saw a lot of relaxed pieces, and that was a concept new to me because in Belgium, you don't have this. How it entered my mind is a piece wherein the audience can be relaxed and leave if they need to, do the things they need to be attentive. There are subtitles, sign interpreters. You can put on your earplugs if you need to. And this made me, in a way, uncomfortable because it was confronting me with how I'm in other contexts uncomfortable. And the first time you're like, oh, okay, I can fidget. I can't put in my ear thingies if the music is too loud. And this first experience, or you're allowed to relax, made me quite uncomfortable, actually. Not like a specific performance, but just like the context of venues being more accessible.
I had an experience last night in the show we saw, which I loved.
This was Quiebra Silencio. Quiebra Silencio is a solo performance by choreographer Ritza Stazia, in which she explores her experiences growing up in the Caribbean diaspora.
Where there was speech that was not in English, and there's no translation. And I loved that. Like, I felt uncomfortable in as much as I was just aware that I don't speak that language. I could make some guess for some translation at some point, but that was like a really positive uncomfortableness for me, actually. Yeah, so I actually think uncomfortableness can be really positive in theatre if there's an awareness. I think it's when there's not an awareness, it can feel really problematic.
Hester Stefan, being an English performer and the majority of the people speak English, would it be much harder for you to achieve a similar feeling for your audience as you experienced during Quiebra Silencio? Do you regret that? Is it an aim of yours to elicit such a feeling in your audience?
I think my closest analogy I have for that is about my body. If I put my body in work, some people find my body hard to read and they can't translate it into what it should signify, which is why, so then I would intentionally do that. So if I put my body in work, it's very specific. I don't put it in work just generally, unless I want to put something hard to read and blurry in there, which is maybe a similar thing of being like, oh, I don't quite read this language or understand this language, in order to bring up those questions of like, well, what is that language and why am I assuming it's like that? And yeah, hopefully it could have the same effect as last night, because in the act of being not included last night, I felt really drawn in, which was what I found so exciting about it.
You both speak Dutch, Mathieu and Musia. Oh, do you like to react to Hester Stefan's experience of the play?
Yeah, now I'm like jealous that I understood.
Yeah, I saw the play for a second time. So it's also then you have like, you go again in a piece and it's like, oh, I remember this bit and this bit and this bit, and I forgot actually about the text, like literally the words. So for me, it wasn't also about these words. And yeah, I understand that you still feel it if you don't understand it.
Because I think in the performer is, it's such an embodied piece. So even if you don't understand the words being said, the performer is doing so much communicating that there's a lot to read outside of the language or receive outside of the language. And also a thing I loved about that was it didn't feel like the language was about content. It wasn't like, oh, if you don't know the meaning of this word, you lost. It felt like it was about, like, you know, what temperature is this feeling I'm having, or what is this energy, or what is the flavor of this moment? And those things feel pretty universal, you know, and it's quite, I basically had this sensation that I did understand, even though I didn't understand the spoken language. So I think that's what was the really exciting thing.
I find it quite interesting because we also, the piece before Quiebra Silencio, went to see Goodbye Erdogan, which was mostly in English, but also had some Turkish. And I have that experience with that piece where the Turkish was, it didn't matter that you didn't understand it. It was very, I mean, sometimes you would also translate, I feel. And I really personally enjoy listening to other languages. This is obviously, it's a very Dutch festival. The Fringe is slightly more international. This is an international residency. Would you like to share some thoughts about language and pieces and traveling borders and what you've seen?
I feel like the pieces we saw in Edinburgh were, if text was used, text was content rather than just a form or an element. Language was more like a carrier for the message rather than the message itself. I also felt this indeed with Goodbye to Erdogan, that like the message, it's not about how the text is written and which words are chosen so they rhyme well and they sound well.
And do you find that if you understand the language that you lose that form, that you focus only on the content as well?
I think it's easier if you don't understand the language, because you zone out of knowledge, but it's still possible. And that's when that's then the tricky part, and there like the artistry comes in again. I think if you try to achieve this with a language that you know your audience will probably understand.
Any last thoughts you would like to share in this conversation?
I think something just came in my head is that I've been thinking about the real value of being in a group like this. So there's six artists on this exchange residency, because it feels like we don't all have the same, it's not like we're all just united in our taste or in our opinions or something, but the conversations and the kind of like challenges to how each of us have experienced the thing or whatever feel really rich and productive to me. And I've not really had that before. I don't know if it's because sometimes if I'm talking in a group of artists, especially if it's just people I know, there's like a weird under level of competition or something, which is like, can be quite hard to get rid of, which doesn't feel like it's present here. Also, maybe it's because it's outside of a context of like reviews or what, it's not like critics. It's not like we're critics being like, how many stars do we give this show, you know? But I'm just really aware of how like enriching and important I'm finding it to be able to be in these conversations where it feels like we have loads of crossover, but actually also feels like six quite distinct place, you know, situations that we each have as well. So maybe I'm just saying something about like the value of conversation where you feel, where you're not feeling that it's either for marketing or for reviews or for competition, you know, it's just for kind of trying to expand and push and challenge and think together, feels really important.
Yeah, I really strongly agree on that.
What great words to end it on, Hester Stefan. Thank you. And thank you too, Muzia, Mechoy. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast series, which came out of the new International Residency Program collaboration between the Dutch Theatre Festival, the Theatre Festival of Flanders, and the Battersea Arts Centre in London. This podcast was made by Debbie Oskam and Lisanne Kniessen, with the help of Luc de Groen.